よいしょ。
Dude, he's everything I freaking could have hoped for. He's freaking awesome.
Last 5 minutes of light on the last day.
I spotted a nice buck. I just want to make that clear. He called me Eagle Eye. He almost tried to redact the fact that I'm Eagle Eye. No sense on looking at does, man. That's all you're finding.
Welcome to another episode of the Muley Freak Podcast. The goal here at Muley Freak is to bring you guys the realest conversations with the most interesting guests and cover every topic that has to do with hunting big game out west. All of these conversations are unscripted. All of the topics are real. And we hope that you guys find them useful. Stay tuned for this episode. Thanks again.
Man, I got a lot of questions because it's funny. I think a lot of the listeners, if they haven't, some of them have, but when you buy a brand new bow, a lot of people, it doesn't cross their mind to worry about the strings on their bow.
No.
Is that a fair statement?
I mean, not at any time. I mean, not even
that's true.
Several years down the road. They're just like, it's still going.
That's true.
I'm going to just keep rolling it. And they come in, and it's like, well, your string is like an inch longer than it's supposed to be at this point. And, you know, it looks like it'll probably explode if you're not careful too much here, you know.
That's funny. I think, you know, everybody's thought is, oh, I got to get me a cool rest or a nice rest or I got to get me a cool stabilizer. I got to get me, you know, a quiver and all that stuff. And it's some of the guys, the strings is kind of like
You
know,
yeah, absolutely.
Really. And it's funny you say that. It was last year. My dad has this old Browning compound, the ones that have like the portion of the cable that runs on each cam is actually steel cable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the middle,
the teardrops.
Teardrops. And then in the middle is actual bowstring. And yeah, he's like, what do you think? Should I do this? And I'm like, honestly, Dad, I'm like, you need to just freaking get a new bow.
Yeah, and those get really scary. I mean, a regular bow nowadays is bad enough when the strings go. You get those cables flipping around with those lead teardrops whipping around your arms, and it's a real ugly situation.
Exactly. Hurry. We took it into a local bow shop, and the guy, he looked it over and was like, you know, I took it all apart, and the steel cables look great. You know, none of the coating was coming off and all that. He's like, I think we're good as long as we just replace the center string. And I'm like, well, all right, let's see how it works. But I think it is in the back of my dad's mind now. He's starting to look for a new bow.
Yeah. So you can spend $100 and get a bow that's so far superior to that.
Yeah.
By the time you buy a string, I mean, you're going to get a bow that probably has a decent string on it and will be enjoyable to actually shoot a little bit.
That's what I told him. I'm like, the worst thing I can do for you, Dad, is to let you shoot my bow because it'll ruin you.
Yep.
And you'll be done and you'll want a new one.
Absolutely.
So, Ken, let's talk a little bit about, what made you start Dark Archer Customs? Where did it all begin?
Really, it was being frustrated at spending a bunch of money for some other strings, actually.
Really?
Some nice strings. I don't know whether I say the name or not, but
no, that's
either way, I paid some good money for some well-respected, well-named strings in 2007, it would have been. And I was similar, right? I mean, I started really at archery in 2002 and muddled through it with an old bow that I dinked around with as a teenager and ended up killing a little 3-point buck the first year, then upgraded to a little better PSC bow the year after that, and hunted that for a couple of years and then upgraded again. So it was one of those, like, right on that cusp where I probably didn't really need to upgrade anyway for strings. And then I got a used bow at that point that was definitely a better bow, got a used Hoyt, top of the line Hoyt, and you know, so that time I loved it, so I hung on to it and got a pair of strings, and I'm going antelope hunting, and here I am, I'm just like barrel rolling arrows towards antelope, and this is after I had already retuned the thing several times, and go back to camp, sure enough, I'm just like 20 yards, I can't even hardly hit a block target.
Oh,
you know,
man.
It's just, and it's way out of time again. It's like, this is ridiculous, I spent $120 for these things, you know. And So I started looking around, found some other small builders, you know, similar to me that I bought from, and I was happy with those. And then me just being as I am, I just wanted to start doing more and more of it myself. And me and the wife had a bunch of bows, and between the two of us, like, well, even if I just try and replace these even at the cheaper cost, you know, it's like, it's a pretty expensive venture to restring all of our bows, you know, every year, every other year, you know, depending on what we shoot them. So like, well, I'll see what this is all about and see how hard it is. And started with really just cheap kind of four post setup and started dabbling with that, and ended up not being anywhere near my expectations on quality and availability and what it could do, and fumbled with that for a bit, and then spent a pretty good chunk of money for a little John jig, and just kind of started going from there. I mean, basically it all started from having a crappy set of high-end strings, and I'm like, well, this is garbage, you know. I was like, well, might as well, I'm doing everything else. I already got a press and got arrow saws and already doing this and that and the other. So then once I got some better equipment, I'm like, well, I might as well see if some other friends would be interested in me building some strings and kind of pay for things, and kind of rolled around like that for about 5 or 6 years. I just kind of
doing like close friends and
family and that, and mostly friends, and it started going. I'm like, well, I'll see if I can grow this a little bit bigger, you know, and ended up getting a really nice piece of equipment with my new server machine that I had, and that really kicked things up after a couple of years, and just all along the way, you know, improving quality and my techniques and everything. And so, you know, I certainly did not build a top of the line string for the first few years, for sure.
Well, it's like, it, yeah. You know.
And so just continually building and learning new, picking up on different techniques and ideas and trial and error. And I said, I started just pinging around, and some other friends were, you know, they had little side businesses. I got in there, then I'd get handed on to someone else in another little shop or whatever. And before I knew it, I'm just like hitting 3 or 4 shops I'm building for. And
nice.
And then it just got too crazy. I just couldn't handle it for a bit. I tried training some people and never could get the right individuals there. The problem is I need to find someone that doesn't hunt that wants to build bowstrings.
That's a funny dichotomy too, because we have the same thing at Muley Freak. It's like when hunting season rolls around, we're like, damn, we need like 3 or 4 guys that just don't hunt.
I know.
To just run things for 4 months out of the year, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it's a terrible thing for sure. I get all these, dude, I'd love, it's like, yeah, I know, but then you want to be gone the same times I want to be gone.
Yep.
So this kind of sucks. So I kind of had to pull things back a little bit and slow down. I'm still busy. I mean, this being a side gig anyway, you know, it's certainly can be taxing on the time, but it's been great for sure. I know all the people I've met and the people I've helped, and you know, that's the problem. And there's a lot of bad information out there in the archery world still, even with all the information that's available. It's still,
there's a lot of bro science
going on. Exactly. And there's a lot of I lost my train of thought there, but it's just
everybody's, you know, they,
oh, and I think the thing is you need a lot of hands-on too, right? I struggle. It's like I can look at someone way easier and see what's wrong than I can look at myself, right? It's really hard to look at yourself and not see the flaws as much.
Going back to how you got started in the first place, if you weren't so hands-on with the tuning of your own bow and the cutting of your own arrows and doing all this, if you weren't so hands-on in that, you might have not been able to put a magnifying glass on your string.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
It wouldn't have led to that. So you're right. You know, having a certain amount of hands-on with your own bow, it's really going to make, and you know, for those guys that aren't as hands-on, they're not even going to worry about it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah. And that's certainly being my big thing, is just trying to pass that information on. I mean, I certainly don't know all the answers, and what I do won't translate to everybody, but I really try to lay out as many options as possible to people. And I mean, I enjoy the string building side of it for sure, but just passing on the archery to where they will enjoy it and not get frustrated with it, because I think that's well, I know, I mean, even as me, I'm a reasonable archer, and it still frustrates me to no end, and I know all the knobs and the buttons to twist and turn and try and improve my accuracy and get the bow to work better. And I mean, these people that just have no idea, like I said, they just come and hand you your bow, and they have no concept of, I mean, even basic tuning stuff. Yeah. You know, it's really tough, and I think it's really a big hit on confidence too in the archery game, because I mean, I can tear my bow down, and I've done it a few days before the hunt. It's like, man, this bow isn't working for me. I've torn a whole bow apart, thrown on another bow that I knew was more reliable, set it up, and you know, gone and been successful with it in three or 4 days, you know. Because
that gives me anxiety just hearing that. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
And that's exactly right. And it does to most people, because they don't know their equipment good enough to say, oh, if I do this, that, it's going to affect this direction. And for me, it's like, whatever. It's like, I know the knobs to turn and twist, and
you can
get it back dialed in. And you need, even if you know you got a bow that's like, dude, this one's going to be a shooter no matter what I do to it.
Yeah.
You get it set back in there and throw stuff back on, and you're golden in a hurry. And
I think it's, I think a lot of the frustration comes from when you have a bow dialed in. You know, for some of these guys, well, myself included, you know, I've taken it to some of the local shops, and they've got it set up, and it's shooting awesome. I haven't experienced this, but I've heard, you know, secondhand stories where it's like, dude, this thing was shooting darts 6 months ago, and now he's like, I can't group within 5 inches, man. I don't know what the deal is. I can't group within a foot. I think it's more frustrating when you don't know what the cause is.
Mm-hmm.
And your only option is to, you know, take it to a shop. And it's led me to kind of worry about it more myself with my own bow, and worrying about tuning my bow. And I learned how to adjust my rest, and I learned how to get it all leveled out. And I've learned some of the basics. I don't have a bow press, so there's a lot of things that I can't do.
Yeah.
But on the basic, on the basic level, it's like, you know, I understand how my bow can change, and I can understand what needs to happen to keep it somewhat tuned throughout the year, to where I don't need to take it to a shop every time. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get to the point where I had a press and I could tune my bow. I'd love to be able to say I could tear that thing down and put it together 3 days later and go hunting.
Yep.
But yeah, it's for those guys that can't, it's good to be able to find somebody that can do it reliably.
Yeah.
And just say, here you go, dude, save me.
Yeah. And it is tough for that. I mean, I've certainly encountered that all the time, right? I've gotten them from all the shops across the valley. I can tell you that much, you know, people are just frustrated with the help they're getting, and it's hard. I've seen it firsthand. I mean, I've been involved and close to a lot of people who have ran shops over the years, and I don't know why it is that getting good help is so hard. I think part of it is, we as archers in general are just kind of, you kind of have to be loners and lone wolves, and you get that attitude where you're like, well, what I'm shooting is the best out there.
Yeah.
And it's tough for those people to just open up and say, yeah, this might not work for you, you know? I mean, they're just going to try and force something on you and look at you like you shouldn't be shooting that bow, like, to get off my mountain because you don't know anything about that bow. So
yeah, there's a little bit of that.
I think it's a huge problem. It's that whole bro mentality, right? I mean, it's really tough, and I see it all the time. I've witnessed it firsthand. I mean, no one that knows me would say that I'm anything near of a bow slouch, but I mean, I'm pretty unassuming as far as my look goes, and I go to a shop and I'll get the cold shoulder just as anybody, you know, not knowing my butt from the hole in the ground, you know?
Yep.
And it's tough. I don't know. It's a big problem for sure with a lot of the shops, I think. It's just finding that good help that really understands that there's a lot of teaching that needs to happen in this sport. Otherwise, you're just going to have a lot of really ornery, upset people that are frustrated with it.
Yeah. And I think we're kind of – well, so let's talk about where you're based out of.
Yeah, I'm in Lehigh now.
Lehigh, Utah. Yep.
Just moved down there last June, actually. So I was in West Jordan for several years. And
okay.
So a little bit of move, but everyone's been more than willing to follow.
So, well, that's good. So speaking locally, I feel like here in Utah specifically, I hate to kind of narrow down the podcast, but it is true that we kind of have, we're in a sweet spot where there's a growing number of bow hunters and growing number of people jumping into the archery sport. And that growing number just means that May, June, July, and August, it's a shit show when you show up at any of these bow shops.
Yep, it is.
And the hard part is from September, October, and then into February and April, March and April, it's like, it's a ghost town. Some of them are only open 3 hours a day.
Yeah.
And having that spread out, it's like, that can't be good for keeping good help around 24/7.
No.
And making sure that they're going to be there next year. And then, and I think so much of that comes from just, I hate to say it, but I think it's procrastination. If everybody was just diligent with their tools and making sure that everything was in line, and if they're out shooting their bow and something's screwy in December, they take it in.
Yep.
Get it fixed, take care of it, shooting darts. They don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And if they're constantly shooting their bow, I think a lot of it's got to do with just constant use. It's, I don't know. I don't like the mentality of just put your bow in a case and then, July rolls around, I better shoot it. And then what's wrong? I'm going to go take it to the bow shop and bitch and moan because they're not helping me. And I'm hunting in 2 weeks. Where's my bow at? You know what I mean? I don't know. It's kind of a weird deal. But that's my experience taking it to, you know, some of these local shops. Luckily, well, the shitty part is the shop that I've taken my stuff to just closed down. Mm-hmm. And that's the story with a lot of them.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
They can't sustain it. I've had great help with some of the bow shops, but...
Oh, I'm not saying it's void completely.
No, it's not. You get, that's the good thing.
I think the problem is there is a higher percentage than you'd ever like to see in a service industry.
Yeah.
Just poor service, unfortunately. And it's just the nature of trying to hire good help in general that wants to be personable. I mean, I was in the Sprint store the other day, unfortunately, and it's like... All three of them, I was like, you guys, I just want to freaking... Someone bend over. I'm going to just... send my foot right up your ass right now. I cannot believe it was just like so. Oh my gosh, ticked off by the time I left there. So I like it's certainly not focused on the archery groups in general, but it's just unfortunate.
I know it. So let's talk about why should the focus? Well, not necessarily a focus, but why does a bow hunter need to worry about his or her string? Why? What's what?
Well, I mean, certainly you got to, you know, making sure your bow stays in tune is obviously the biggest one, right? We could
back up a little bit. What does the string play in the tune of a bow? I'll bring it to you this way.
Yep.
When I first started bow hunting, the term stretch your string, the cogs in my mind were like, wait, what?
Yeah.
It stretches?
Yep.
So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, they absolutely will. I mean, you can certainly mitigate it mostly, but I mean, for the most part, they'll always stretch at some point. You just hope it's pretty minimal depending on the process that you've done and the materials. Most strings nowadays are made either of Dyneema or a mixture of Vectran and Dyneema, and they have different qualities for each. But definitely the string stretch, you get some stretching, and then depending on what bow you have, your cams are going to get out of time if they stretch differently. I mean, a single cam, no matter what they say, they still need to be tuned. I mean, they don't put tuning marks on a Matthews or a PSE for nothing on a single cam.
Yeah.
So you just hope that they stretch proportionally and it'll stay somewhat in time. And so you get out of that sink and your barrel rolling broadheads, if a guy's
shooting a parallel cam system and the string is stretching, but it's stretching proportionally and the timing stays good, you might not notice.
Yeah, not as much. I mean, hopefully you'll get the aeroflight. What you could potentially lose is some pin gapping, right? Because you're going to lose poundage when you start getting the string stretch. But that could be compensated if your draw length ends up getting a little longer. That could compensate for lower poundage potentially. So there is kind of some weights and balances, I guess, depending on what happens. That really isn't going to be too bad. And the saving grace is most people. I mean, most people they can't t- tell the accuracy difference anyway a lot of times when they're just
that's my problem
when they're just shooting in their backyard with field tips. Yeah, right.
Yep.
Certainly the biggest is if you're shooting fixed blade broadheads. I mean, that's always the biggest, and that's, I mean, fixed blade broadheads in themselves cause way more problems than just strings in general. Yeah. But so I think that's certainly the biggest of the problems. And so yeah, you got your cam timing, your draw weight, which is going to affect your pin gap, and draw length, which then could, you know, make it feel funny.
There's kind of a domino effect going on.
Yeah.
There. And some of those things, they may be at the bottom of some people's checklist when it comes to diagnosing a problem with their grouping, or, you know, why is my bow not staying tuned, or, or something. But to have that be, is it something that they should worry about as a, I mean, I guess my question is, let's say a guy just bought a brand new bow from Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the starting point? Is that something that they could shoot a string for a little bit, see what happens, or what would you suggest?
Well, it kind of depends on the coming. They're getting better now. Certainly the manufacturers have upped their game for sure on their strings. For a lot of years, I mean, most, they're just built so fast, it's hard. I mean, a Hoyt will build a single string in like 3 or 4 minutes, basically. Oh,
wow. They're cranking them out.
Yeah. So they're cranking out hundreds of strings, thousands of strings a day. With not very many people, literally every 3 to 4 minutes there's a string popping off their jig. So the chances of there being a flaw on any of them, right, on any builder that's building that fast is exponential with just how fast they're cranking through them, you know? And really, like, so they're good. I mean, as long as you got, you know, your peeps holding and your timing looks like it's holding, you know, shoot it until you wear it out, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's why I don't mind. I don't, you know, if you don't want my business at the moment, that's fine. You know, when you want a replacement, then come to me, you know? Yeah. It's like, I hate to see people, you know, spending money that's like, well, I don't know if you necessarily need it, you know?
Right,
I mean, as long as it's working for you.
Yeah.
If you got some nasty peep twist, or it's like, man, it keeps coming out of time and tune.
So would those be the indicators of a string kind of starting to fatigue?
Peep twist? And that's usually happen pretty quick right off the bat. I mean, the peep twist is usually pretty immediate on a on a bad string.
Like within the first 100 shots, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I've noticed that. I started shooting Triaxe last year, and I love it. I haven't changed the string, but I love the bow. Before that, I was shooting another brand of bow, and I did notice. I took it into the shop and whatever, and they said, yeah, go home, shoot it, and then we'll come and do your peep. And I'm like, all right. They put my peep in.
Yeah.
And no kidding, I think it was maybe 50 shots. And I started to realize, I was like, I had to twist the peep before every shot.
And that's due to the pre-stretching them.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's where, you know, like custom string like me, you know, I pre-stretch them all after I twist them, and then stretch it for at least an hour before I serve it up on top of that. And that helps settle all that. And that's why I say, go shoot it, because you're trying to actually now settle that bundle for the builder, basically, you know, whereas a custom string, they're basically trying to get that compaction for you just by putting it on their stretchers, and they're trying to mitigate that more with stretching under more pressure when they serve it up. So that's why things have gotten better. I mean, there's some places they're up to like 800 pounds they're stretching a string to serve it up. I think the average is close to 500.
Wow.
Right now, so they're really just trying to more speed, you know, get it settled in there.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of their sauce there a little bit. And but so there's a lot of automation
so
built into that.
Yeah, that's that much poundage, I would imagine. So taking care of the stretching beforehand, like if a guy comes to you for strings, you're taking care of a lot of the stretching that's going to happen.
Pretty much all of it. I mean, I very rarely, I mean, the single cams will sometimes fight me a little bit with that big long string. I've finally figured out once again, you know, slowly evolving and figuring out. I've found some
tips and
hopefully
tricks.
I got some stuff now that looks like it's cleaned up a lot of my issues, but like a regular binary or dual cam, hybrid cam bow. I mean, I basically shoot it enough to paper tune it and throw the peep in there, and it's rock solid.
Nice.
You know?
Nice.
And so that's that's kind of what I strive for anyway in that regard.
That's so it sounds like to me the biggest benefit of getting a string built, a custom string built, is just you're checking that box on things that could go wrong when it comes to tuning your bow.
Yep.
It's the same as any other part of the bow.
Yeah.
But the string is to me, the string's one of those things that's it's like really the only, not to say elastic, but it is kind of elastic part on the whole bow. Everything else is mechanical or aluminum or you know what I mean? And it's like a lot of those are easy to fix once and call it good. Throw some Loctite in there, call it good. When it comes to the string, checking that one off your box is going to cause you a lot less headache.
Yeah, and that's for sure why a lot of people come to me and just say, restring my new bow, because they're like, I don't want to get 200, 300 shots into it and be starting to broadhead tune it and be like, oh, man, this thing's...
And then it's off.
Yeah, then it's
they
off.
They didn't know it with field tips on. They had no idea. And then they go throw broadheads on. It's like, oh, shit.
Or they're, you know, same type of thing. Or they get it tuned up, and then it comes out tuned again, and they're like, man, this is freaking annoying. And so...
Gotcha.
So a lot of guys will just say, throw a set on there, and let's... run with those right off the bat, you know.
Get it off the bat. That's what Eric did, right? Mm-hmm. That's so he got in contact with you and was like, here, man. Start right off the bat. Let's build this thing. Why did he go with pink? What's his deal? Come on.
I mean, it slowed down a lot. I mean, I was burning through more pink material than I could
ever. Oh, really?
Oh, man, it was popular there.
That was the deal, huh?
Yep.
Oh, that's funny.
I definitely go through ebbs and flows. It's funny to see the colors that it's like, oh, man, all of a sudden I got like six orders of this all of a sudden. And then
oh, that's cool. So let's talk about the business side, I guess. Somebody wants to come to you and get strings built. What's kind of the go-to process for you right now?
Most people usually get a hold of me through Facebook or Instagram.
Okay.
And my phone number's on there. If they want to call me, text me through there as well.
Nice.
I don't have a website yet. It's one of those things. It's like, well, my word of mouth is good enough to keep me busy enough. Yeah. I can't.
I've talked to a handful of business. Well, a couple of people even on the podcast that are like, yeah, the website would be nice, but.
Yeah.
Man,
yep.
Then it just opens a floodgate.
Yeah,
which is good. You
something
know.
Else to maintain.
Yeah,
and keep
true.
Up. And that's just like you. That's the worst thing about websites. Like, sweet, yeah, you get this cool website, you build it up, and you put it out there. And then you realize, oh, in 3 months, I got to pretty much like redo the whole stupid thing again because I got to get some new content on there and not make people bored.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeping coming back, you know. So it's like, well, I say about the Facebook page, right? You can update those pretty easily and
daily down
yeah
there. Yep.
Exactly.
I hear you. So Facebook and Instagram, and then your phone number on there, they can with the ordering process, most of it over the phone, or how does it work?
So most of the people I deal with usually end up coming to me with their bows and want me to install and tune it as well. I'm probably maybe, man, just 5-10% of that I ship out, or people just come and grab them, probably.
Oh,
you
gotcha.
Know?
Okay.
Which is probably, you know, it's fits in about in line with what you'd expect, and the people I deal with, you know, about 5-10% of the people know what they are doing and want to take the time and do it themselves and get their stuff the way they want it. And then the rest of the population needs someone else to do it, right?
They just bring you the whole bow and say, here you go.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, which is good. Then I can usually, that's, I like that. And I can always look over their equipment a little bit else and see if there's anything else that
that's good.
Might ping them. You know, it's like, oh man, you're drawing this little ski wampus or this, that, or the other. So I try and make sure I impart some extra knowledge onto them and
there you go.
Get them helping out, get them down the right path a little better. Cause there's been plenty of instances that I've fixed draw lengths that were quoted in other establishments. It's like, you might want to reassess that.
Interesting.
Keep your ear on. You might want to drop that down a couple inches.
You don't want to lose an ear.
Yep.
Oh, that's funny. So if somebody, let's say somebody from out of state, some of the listeners or something, when they come to you, and what's the process for just doing a string?
Yeah, so they can call me and I'll kind of just basically get the bow information.
Okay.
Most, it kind of depends on the bow, on what I need. That's the biggest problem, actually, being the smaller guy. Well, and strings in general is just getting serving specs for all these different bows.
Yeah, that's kind of a library in and of itself.
Yeah, it is a library, and it's a lot of the places, they just want you to buy their strings only, right? I mean,
I could see that.
It's real. I mean, you can't even get a bow with this stringing cable lengths on it anymore, right? I mean, it's almost impossible to even find specs on how long the thing's supposed to be to begin with.
Jeez.
And even then you get specs that aren't very good on top of that sometimes. You know, I know the primes, it's like I got to build the cables about almost a quarter inch long, otherwise I give you another 6 or 7 pounds of draw weight on your bow. It's like, oh, that's nice to know.
Oh, jeez. Well, that's tough on your end.
Yeah, it is. So once they give me that information, you know, usually they're making the model, I can get most of it. Lethoich, you got their different cam families. So if I get the cam, so the best is obviously to have a sticker on there. Hopefully it says this is the string lengths that I need. As long as someone hasn't changed the cam on it and then build the wrong set. That's happened a few times, unfortunately.
Gotcha.
But so they call in, then I ask them what colors they want. Have just about any solid color you could want.
Nice.
BCY offers. And then I have a couple different materials. I have the BCYX and then the Mercury, BCY Mercury that I build with at the moment. And unfortunately, the X has been replaced with the new material, which is the same material, just a little skinnier, a little thinner, kind of like the Mercury. So it's working through that X, which is unfortunate because the X is really great material. I love that material a lot. But the Mercury is also solid. I like both of them a lot. It's hard to kind of differentiate which one I like more. I'm tending more to the Mercury right now, which I think once I get the X99, it'll be kind of like Mercury, but with the X material properties in it. So
gotcha.
Just kind of working through that. So they picked, if they have any preference, if not, you know, I'll just go with what I would do, and then they can pick their serving color as well.
Nice.
Choose, you know, my standard sets, one or two colors they can pick from.
Oh, okay.
They can throw a third or a fourth in there for an upcharge, and then after that, it's, you know, give me your address and I'll whip them up and get them ready to send out.
Send them out.
Get the payment.
Nice.
So,
excellent.
Yep.
Well, it sounds like there's a handful of just being able to customize. I mean, just you can get exactly what you want, what you got in mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even down to pink, like Eric.
Yep, absolutely.
Float your boat.
Yep.
Nice. Now, so if guys do, let's say somebody local, they've got a bow to bring to you, do you just do it out of a certain address or?
I do it out of my house now.
Nice.
And I've also met people at my day job as well.
Nice.
But yeah, most of that's all in Utah County, unfortunately. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, most and my wife is great. She helps out. She's good, and she'll help out during the day if someone can't come in the evening,
drop off, or
whatever. Yep, exactly.
That's good.
So she's been a big help over the years for sure.
Nice.
And don't come drop it off, and be sure you bring me some arrows.
It's
always tough to do. It's like I always forget about it. It just seems like it's such a natural, obvious thing. You know, it's like you want me to tune it, you know, bring me some of your arrows, because tuning with my arrow is probably not going to be ideal for the situation.
Yeah, that would make sense. That's a good little tip. Yep, you're going to go drop your bow off.
Please bring at least two or three arrows, and then make sure I have at least hopefully one good one out of the group.
Gotcha.
You know,
I've
had some very questionable arrows that I've caught and lucked out not getting hurt on over the years for sure.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's sketchy. That is sketchy. So, I had another question about it. What kind of lead time are we talking about here? I know it might change and fluctuate.
Oh, yeah, it certainly fluctuates, but I've luckily done a very good job of keeping it, well, extremely quick, obviously, compared to the rest of the
crew. It's a good comparison.
Crew, yeah. And I'm usually, for a full job, I'll tell people 2 to 4 days and closer to 2 days, usually. So it's even on the high demand, I usually can keep up with it.
Now, full job, that includes the bow. That's
yeah, so if I install and tune it and everything.
Gotcha.
So a string set, usually I can, usually it's a day, I could have it ready the next day, usually, but.
Nice.
Unless anything else pops up. But I mean, so usually 2 days is kind of a long pull for when I can get a string set.
So it sounds like really anything is, if it's outside of a week, it's super long.
Anything
like that's inside of a week's ballpark.
Yeah.
Nice.
at the moment, Lisa, it can certainly change. So,
well, hopefully with this podcast, you know, we can send a few more people your way. Yep. That'd be good.
Yep. If I'm hunting or something, that's all. I've got the bear hunt coming up here in a couple weeks.
Oh, so nice. I'll be
slowing down a little bit here.
You're hunting here in Utah?
Then? Yeah. Yeah. Nice. I got a LaSalle tag. So,
oh, hell yeah.
So I'm hoping I'm weighing over my head, but I hope I've got some decent spots that bears will want to find. And
nice.
Come snack on my bait.
It'll be over bait then.
Yeah.
Have you been taking in bait yet or anything?
I have, and I can't even put bait down until the day it starts on the 25th. Gosh, yeah. So
okay, that's right.
In Utah, so I still got to get my baits. I hope they approve them here in the next couple days before I go down and start setting up my shop where I want to down there. So
nice. Now, LaSalle, that's one of the units they give out the most. More bear tags.
Yeah, it's high concentration down there for sure.
How do you find the crowd of people out there? I mean, it's only 30, 40 tags, isn't it?
Yeah, there's 23 bait tags. Okay. I don't know how many. I think there's probably 30 or so hound tags probably right now. And I've seen a lot of houndsmen down there
the
last couple of weeks when I've been down there cruising around. Not a lot of bears yet. I mean, they're slow. There's a lot of snow down there still right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, we were in Moab a handful of weeks ago for Easter, and it was, I couldn't believe it. I mean, normally there's always snow out there that time of year, but to have it down that low,
it's
crazy.
You get cut off in a hurry going up that hill. I mean, you don't get very close to any of the passes right now, that's for sure.
Wow.
It's really deep down there, and it's showing the bears are up high, which is weird still. I mean, I did see a big boar. I'm pretty sure it was a boar anyway.
Yeah.
The first weekend I was down there, and like, man, I wish I could go chase him right now instead of hoping he's still around in a couple weeks.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. Well, that's good. Well, good. So, any other hunts coming up this fall that you've got on the docket?
I was
starting to get emails.
Yeah, Nothing. I drew a box elder archery deer tag.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
He seems super excited about it.
I'm stoked. This is only good, the fact that I got X. I'll probably be getting I did a string for an antelope tag last year for depredation tag. So I got that. I'll be hunting and early on, hopefully, and getting one for my wife. And so you can fill the freezer with some of that. That's her favorite for sure.
She likes that one, huh?
Oh, yeah. That's her favorite critter, too, to hunt. So
nice.
Down there. And then I got, basically, I was going to go to Wyoming and hunt antelope, but I got some friends that just drew some crazy tags this year. So my one buddy, he's got a San Juan elk archery tag.
Oh boy.
So it's like, well, I could hold off for a year hunting antelope in Wyoming to go look on the San Juan. And then another friend that was literally, I've got him into hunting. I helped him kill his first big game animal 3 years ago and with a rifle, and he's now killed 3 species with the bow and 4 animals with the bow. And like his first archery was a antelope on Southwest Desert with me.
Dude.
And then he killed a little buck, a cow elk, and another cow elk last year on his second year archery hunting, just in like 4 days of hunting, something ridiculous.
He jumped head first.
Oh yeah. And then he just pulled one of the brand new archery bison cow tags with like 3 points, 3 or 4 points.
Are you kidding me?
So I'm like, dude, your luck is gonna run out at some point. You're just like, just burnt it all up, man, which is awesome. I mean, you got a late start, so that's good, you know, because he's a little older than I am, so he's like way late in the game. And so he's had some good times for sure. He's got the attitude you need for archery, and he's just a goer, and
that's good.
Doesn't get down, so it's like he fits the archery game perfectly. So, and it shows. I mean, he's had a lot of good success. And
well, good for him.
So it's like, yeah, I could definitely spend some time on the hunter. He's chasing buffalo. That wouldn't hurt my feelings either.
Yeah. It sounds like you got a pretty eventful fall coming up, man, my friend. That's awesome.
Yep.
I get, man, some of those people that are just knocking out their once-in-a-lifetimes here in Utah, man. It's like you have no idea how good you got it.
I know.
Some of these guys are waiting 20-plus years to get one of their once-in-a-lifetimes taken care of, you know.
Yeah, I burnt all mine up in my once-in-a-lifetime. I mean, I haven't had any sort of luck at all since I drew my mountain goat tag with 6 points in 2012, and I've had to max out on everything since.
Yeah.
Last year was the first year I drew my Wasatch West deer tag with 0 points. It's like a 50% chance every year drawn. I had not hit it until last year.
Oh, man.
There, I'm back on my schedule of not getting it again. So,
oh, man.
So it's just been brutal. It's like, 6 points for a Wasatch elk tag. You know, it's like, I should get that with 5. Come on. Everyone else is getting this thing with like 3 and 4.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah. Yeah, the curve just keeps going like this, man. I hear you. So good old Box Elder this year.
Yep.
Well, there you go.
Yes, indeed.
Make it happen. Well, good. So we'll point the listeners in your direction. Dark Archer, what was the Instagram?
Dark Archer Customs.
Dark Archer Customs on Instagram.
Dark Archer, yep. And then Dark Archer Customs on Facebook. And my phone number, if you want to get a hold of me, if you don't look that up, is 801-573-7518.
Excellent.
So text me, call me.
I'll get you set up quick. Now, so, like I said, now's the time of year to start getting that stuff out of the way, because naturally it's going to progress into just getting busy.
Yep.
And then everybody's frustrated.
Yep.
So just get it done, taken care of now, and get your bow dialed in.
Yep. The only way I want to see you after, at minimum, end of July, is if you screwed something up by running a broadhead over your string or fell down carrying your bow around too much, you know?
Yep, there you go. Something very out of the ordinary.
Yep,
exactly. Well, I hear you. Well, Ken, thanks for sitting down and breaking it down for us. I hope we can send some of the listeners your way get everybody squared away with a solid string. I mean, I know Eric's just been shooting his here in the shop randomly, you know, a couple arrows here and there, and he loves it. He just raves about how dialed in it is, and I mean, plus mixed with that, the Matthews Vertix, that thing's that's a tack driver, man.
Nice.
That's a hell of a bow. So you got him set up good. I hope we can drive some business your way.
Yeah, sounds great.
Cool. Well, thanks for sitting in on it, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. It's fun.